You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative. Hey, welcome back to Embodied People. This is Colleen, and this week, first I want to say that I recognize that we're a little bit late getting this episode out this week, and we were also last week. You know, Sarah and I, we both have full-time jobs as professors. We also have personal lives and share in the directing of Integrated Movement Studies. And we have both also been busy, honestly, working on, Sarah was writing a significant essay, and I am working hard at pulling together a second edition of the book, Laban Bartynieff Movement Studies, Contemporary Applications. And so all that to say is we got a little bit behind in recording these, and we apologize, but here we are. I'm back this week. And this week, what I will be sharing with you is we're actually going to talk about a few of the types of touch. And before I dive into what those types of touch are, a bit of contexting. So Integrated Movement Studies, which I direct, and Sarah is one of the core faculty, was founded by Peggy Hackney, Janice Meaden, and Pam Schick, and then brought on significant faculty member Ed Groff. And part of what Integrated Movement Studies became through their loving hands and care was they developed a touch for movement repatterning curriculum. So I'll say that again. It's a touch for movement patterning curriculum. And what that means, it's a series of types of touch practices, ways of bridging touch into movement. So it's not like touch like massage where you lay more or less passive. You know, there's variations, but more or less passive and receptive to kneading in your muscles, which feels so good. I love being massaged. But it's a different kind of touch. This is a touch that involves the person receiving touch being actively present, whether the touch is guiding them and they're aware of where it's going and what it's working towards. But then usually these sessions develop into movement. So they progress maybe in a rhythm of sensation, into perception, into action. And also through like rhythms of like subtlety, like feel this on a sensory level. Simple, try this in a really simple movement, like flexing the femur and the pelvis. And then let's put this into something much more complex, like walking, taking one step after another, which requires that flexion and extension of the femur, or the leg bone in the pelvis. So they developed a touch curriculum that, you know, I wasn't there. I can't say exactly what their intentions were, but I think that I know that their intentions were that they could see that there were things in movement that you could hear about, you could see somebody do, you could lie on the floor next to somebody who could do that. And until you received in your own body certain types of touch, certain touch experiences, it was almost impossible for your neuromuscular system to really know that this thing, this was something, or that you maybe weren't doing one thing and that this other thing was possible. Or to really know that, wait, that's what it's meant when we say flexing the femur into the hollows of the hip, or into the hollows of the pelvis, and then extending it fully. Like, you might think you're doing it, and then somebody's wise touch provides a new sensation, and it changes everything about your physical and intellectual understanding of what you're going for. And so the touch curriculum, in my understanding, it's a place from them, and my practices now of it at IMS is it's a place where all of the different teachings of the Laban Bartynyov system come together, and it amplifies and makes possible an understanding of it in a body level that the person can who's receiving touch can then integrate and inhabit their bodies in a different way because of what they've learned via touch. Another thing is when your hands are on another body. So say I've been talking about the femoral joint flexion or an extension in this example, also known as the thigh lift. But say you're wanting to understand it better, like you're going to be a facilitator or you're going to experience it on yourself, and you practice through your own hands facilitating it on someone else, there's a learning. When you can see it in their anatomy, you can see the shift in the musculature. You can see the shift in how the bony alignment is happening. You can see a shift in the pathways of connection through the body. That then, because you've seen it and your hands have touched it, they've experienced it, and actually your hands have on some level facilitated this new knowing, that you also receive knowledge from that experience. So the learning happens in both directions. So anyway, all that is to say that at Integrated Movement Studies, a foundation of our curriculum is the touch for repatterning work. And certainly I can't offer you all of it today. Both Sarah and I and a lot of graduates from IMS have touch-based private practices. I also integrate it into my classes in ways that I feel is appropriate and helpful for my students. But we also have one-on-one practices where we are working with our touch skills to help our clients, open new relationships in their body, understand their bodies differently, and ultimately have new movement patterns, new ways of moving in their body because of what's offered through our hands. And I love doing this work. This was my full-time job through most of my 20s. I had a private practice in New York City. And I love to integrate touch with fitness. And now I do it with, fitness in some ways, but I'm interested in more general, more broad movement practices. And I use it even in like boxing. I use it in my boxing classes. I use it in my dance classes. And so we have this touch for movement repatterning curriculum. At the foundation of the touch repatterning, I said this word already, is sensation. That we are creating information for the body to receive via sensory processes, via sensory practices. And that through the input of new sensation, then there are new perceptions or new pathways of what's possible in the motor system, in the body, to move. And that from sensation opens new possibilities in the mover. So I think I've got that point fairly, I've wrapped my lips around it in language in a number of different ways. Another thing that I want to say at this point is that while, sure, traditionally, especially in our training programs and in our client work, and even with friends and family as we practice on each other, we are working often one-on-one, or I'm working with a student in a class, but I go over and I say, hey, experience this, see what that does. And that's a more traditional setting, but like during COVID times, and even during a time in my life for a number of years, a couple of years when I was single, that I was really aware of how much less touch I had in all directions, how much less contact my hands and my body had with another human body. And in that time when, between being divorced and being with my current partner, my now partner, who's a wonderful toucher, there was a certain loneliness that I became aware of and not receiving deliberate human touch. And I was, most of the time I could sort of muddle along through my days and ignore it. But there would be times where I'd feel like, gosh, I just I'm very aware of the solitude and the lack of physical contact. And when I would become aware of that, I would sometimes offer these touch practices to myself. And your own hands, you know, there was a certain like feeling of like coming back into my material body, back into myself, even through my own hands, that could be really confirming and really, you know, take off the edge of loneliness. Though I could see how it would go in the other direction, like, oh my gosh, I'm so alone here, offering myself being with touch. But oftentimes, like that practice of presence, was helpful. And so today, I want to offer you a few types of touch and that you can try on yourself. They're fairly simple, or you could try on a friend, a loved one, a child. I have some friends and colleagues who have applied some of these types of touch and some of these simple touches with even their infant children, like helping them fall asleep. And there's something about the intentionality that these types of touches bring. So there is one thing to just touch someone. And there's like follow your instincts, which is really important and really good. Like we all need to be doing that too. And then there's another thing about clarifying one's intention, what they're going for, and clarifying how they're delivering that message through their hands that my friends and colleagues have practiced on their infants. And they've even found that to be like, oh, wow, now I'm really finding a way to get this child to sleep, or creating more expansion in the lungs with this baby that had RSV and has been unable to take a full breath. So, so you, as I'm describing them, you may want to even try them in a way that you can on yourself. So the first kind of touch, or first type of touch, and this is one that we often, if we're doing a session, that we might move through quickly, and it's called being with touch. And so as the name suggests, being with touch is a type of touch that says, I'm here with you. And so it's like laying your hand on your body or someone's body and confirming their ground of being. It says, I'm here with you. Through my hands, I confirm your presence and our relationship here together. We are here together. Or in the case of by yourself, I'm here for you, for myself. I'm here for myself. It confirms the ground of being. Another kind of touch is called listening touch. And so listening touch, being with touch, can phrase or move really beautifully into listening touch. And so listening touch is like your hands are receiving the message. They are listening for the movement that's happening underneath them and receiving the message. They're listening. There are so many different things that the hands could hear or sense as they listen. One of the things they might sense is the rhythm of the breath, especially if the hands are on the torso. It's a really familiar place to feel the growing or the rising of the inhale and the shrinking of the exhale. That will bring me to the next kind of touch in a minute. But they may hear the the hands may hear or feel the rhythm of inhale and exhale. Another thing the hands may feel is maybe like a charge. Like say the body is really amped up. It's really like fiery. It's edgy. It's energized. The hands may feel that sort of vibratory feeling in the muscle or in the body. In the body. They also may feel a kind of passivity, like I've given up energy, like I've got nothing else. So the hands can perceive quality. And there's many other qualities. There's endless amounts of qualities that are possible. But those are some that come to mind for me at first based on things I've experienced. another thing the hands may hear. Oh, that was my dog shaking out. I was practicing the touches on her and I took my hand off. I think she was upset and wanted to return, so she shook it out. Another thing that the hands may perceive underneath them is a sense of three-dimensional voluminousness or a sense of flatness. The hands may also feel the infrastructure of the boniness and then the soft flesh over top, or they may feel the spaciousness, like the crevices that are created by bones coming near each other, what we call a joint anatomically. So there's a lot, there's endless possibilities of what the hands can perceive through listening touch. Another, and I'm working here in my sequence to progress you through from simple towards increasingly complex, and we're going to just do a few. So we started with being with touch, then we went to listening touch, and the next one is called growing and shrinking touch. So I suggested or hinted at this a few minutes ago, and growing and shrinking touch moves from the hands perceiving and feeling the rhythm of the breath to amplifying the sensation. And there may be other ways that you feel growing and shrinking, but the breath is a really natural and easy one. And so say you were to rest your hands on your own torso, which it's up to you, but I think you should do that right now. Or the torso of another person or even an animal. And as your hands listen, they may feel the growing of the inhalation and the shrinking that happens with the exhalation. And so what the hands will start to do with growing and shrinking touch is increase the person's sensation of this. So as the body grows, the hands, the fingers spread apart, the palms get bigger, and even the hand might slightly move away, like decrease the pressure. And as they exhale, the hands shrink, the fingers get closer to each other, the palms get a little bit smaller, and there may be a slight compression. And what this growing and shrinking touch can highlight is the rhythm of the breath, the sense that the body is truly three-dimensional. It has length, it has width, and it has depth. And when the hands echo and amplify the feeling of three-dimensionality through growing and shrinking touch, some really new things are made possible in the body. And you're going to perceive, whether it's your own hands or your hands on someone else or someone touching you, you're going to perceive whatever you perceive. But some of the things that have come to mind about things I have felt is a sense of my inner body's volume, my inner world, the innerness. Truly, I have one. And my outerness, and that my innerness, these are words I'm making up in the moment, but that my inner volume, it is truly alive. And when I feel myself breathe, there's something that's confirmed about my own life, my own generative capacities, and my own destructive capacities, but that I feel that I'm really aware and in touch with the sense that I'm alive. And that sense that I'm alive is the seed of possibility. Breath is the river our lives run along. And to feel that, I think, brings us into an essential connection to ourselves. And when we feel far away from ourselves, which is, you know, I think our days are built on getting farther away and closer to ourselves on a sensory level. But when you feel far away, like distance, like I've gone somewhere else, the breath is a great way that many mystical and religious and spiritual traditions know to bring us back into feeling like we are within and inhabiting ourselves in this moment in ourselves. And so growing and shrinking touch, whether you do it for yourself or you offer it to another, I think it brings us into this presence, and whether it's the presence within oneself or the presence and connection to another. And this is one that certainly some of my friends have really loved. bringing into their infants and toddlers and you know, even in, even older children. And I will say that I worked on my grandfather. He passed away a couple years ago, my mom's father. But I, for a while, I practiced my touch skills on him. He had MS, and he also had had an elective surgery that kind of wasn't so helpful, I think. And I would go into the hospital, and this is one, at that time, we didn't know if he would live or not. He did for quite a while longer, but at that point, it wasn't certain. And I would go into the hospital a few times, and I practiced my touch skills on him. And this was one that he loved. He would ask for it. He'd ask me to do it again and again. And I can really see how feeling himself breathe, feeling connected to his inner life, especially when he was in so much pain and probably feeling very far from himself in order to survive, but to feel sensations of pleasure within his body was really important at that time. I think I perceived in him that it gave him a sense of hope, and it made the discomfort more tolerable. It increased his tolerance to the discomfort. So there's two other kinds of touch I wanted to share today. We started with being with touch. Then we moved into listening touch. And then growing and shrinking touch. And the last two, they're connected. One is called locating touch. And it's like bringing your hands or your fingers and saying, bring your attention right here. So I might bring my fingers to the tip of a nose or to somebody's toe if I'm being sort of cutesy. And so it's touch that says, bring your attention here. Bring your attention here. And I might use this kind of touch if I want to increase a client's awareness of a part of their body. Are you aware of this? So one, sometimes I use this in some of my workshops, and I'll work with a client. So say the participants in the workshop. By the way, I have one coming up in Maine, and it's very affordable, and the coast of Maine is gorgeous to see, at the end of May. More information on that in the end. But say my person's name is Sarah, podcast co-host. I could put my hand on the top of Sarah's head and say, Sarah, using locating touch, Sarah, this is the top of your body. And then I could bring my hands to her feet and using locating touch, say, Sarah, this is the bottom of your body. And I might look at her and find the foremost front surface. Maybe it's her nose, maybe it's her breast. And I could bring my hands to one of those areas, if it was appropriate, of course, and be like, Sarah, this is the frontmost surface of your body. And then I could touch some others and be like, and this is the whole front surface of your body. And Sarah, this is the back of your body. Or bring my hands to, say, the tips of her shoulder blades or scapula and say, Sarah, these are the bottoms of your scapula. So we can be really general, as I was in the first example, or increasingly specific. Sarah, this is the arches of your foot. Sarah, this is the tip of your left pinky, the bottom of your left pinky. And all of this locating touch helps us, I think in my experience, locate, as the name suggests, and fill out from the inside different parts of our body. It's like our attention, our consciousness, our awareness is increasing and magnifying. And there's a homecoming that is possible in that. So that's locating touch. And it can be kind of fun and silly, but it's also, I think, can be so, so confirming, so soothing, so brilliant. And this kind of touch can move then into more complex kinds of touch that I won't talk about today, but that are really useful as we go from being with into locating into a more full-bodied, say, snowboarding or horseback riding movement experience or boxing. I mean, I find this really useful in boxing to help people know where their parts are, and then I might actually direct it more next. Like, Sam, this is the end of your jab. This is your knuckle. Now, Sam, can you connect your knuckle right here? Bring your attention right here into your lower belly. Can you connect those? So I might even start using two different places. So that brings me to the last kind of touch for today's episode. And that's called sliding touch. And sliding touch is like, I guess you could say that it's a progression from locating touch. Because sliding touch says, bring your attention here and now feel how this part connects to another part. So a place that could feel really good for sliding touch, say you start just underneath your collarbones. Maybe you start with a locating touch that says, like, Sarah, or to yourself, Colleen, feel this place. Now, and say you slide your hands along the front of the collarbone a little bit, but then over the top of your shoulders to about either side of the back of the spine. Not on the spine, but either side of it. And then up to the back of the head. Right where the neck meets the base of the skull, that ridge. So you might use your hands to say, feel how these two places connect. Feel the connection between these two places. Another one that can feel really good is from the big toe. So say you start with one big toe along the arch of your foot, up along the inside of the leg, into your lower belly and your belly button, and then maybe back out. You can say, your hands are saying to yourself, Sarah, or Colleen, I'm practicing these touches on myself as I talk to you right now. Colleen, feel how the big toes connect through the inside of the legs into the lower belly and your belly button. And then conversely, or in relationship, how your belly button connects along the inside of your legs out to your inner arches and your big toes. Feel the connection between those places. And feeling these different ways that the body connects to itself is so helpful for our posture. I mean, what it's like posture in the mainstream, but posture, or the way that we are aligned, the way that our body floats on top of one part, on top of another, how we then also ground and settle into the support below. These pathways of connection, I think, can help create a feeling of connectedness, coherence, relationship in the body. Maybe there's a tendency to feel like this part's over here and this part's over here, and there's a disparateness. But these sliding touches that bring the sensation of throughness and connection helps us to know that these parts are related. And this one can feel so, I think, also so good in terms of like remembering. Like, I feel like it's like almost like Mr. Potato Head, but a living 3D breathing version, where the system is coming into increased sensation of connection with itself. There's so many other kinds of touch that are so beyond the scope of this podcast, but five is a ton. Although I think that you can pick and choose them. Hopefully you tried them on yourself in some way. And you can also practice them with other people in your life. So to recap, being with touch, it's touch through your hands that says, I'm here with you. I confirm your ground of being and our connection. And then listening touch. So that's with your hands listening to what's happening in the body, in the flesh, what's present underneath them. And then growing and shrinking touch. This is touch that amplifies the sense of three-dimensionality and that it shifts, that the body, especially supported by the breath, grows and shrinks. And then locating touch. Touch that says, Sarah, these are your cheekbones. Sarah, this is the top front of your pelvis. Sarah, this is the front of your big toe. And Sarah, these are the backs of your heels. And then finally, sliding touch. So sliding touch that says, feel how this place is connected to this place. Feel the pathway of connection through. So that's a lot. That could be a year of exploration. I think that's all I want to offer for today. I am teaching a workshop. It's on the coast of Maine. It's through Alfred University Summer Arts Workshop. So it's limited space. And, you know, I just found out that 3 more people registered. So we're getting down just a few spots left. I'm happy to answer questions. You can find me on Instagram at Colwahl. That's C-O-L-W-A-H-L. You can email me. Again, that's C-O-L-W-A-H-L on Instagram. There's IMS, of course, imsmovement.com, so the website. But it is June, I misspoke, I said it's the end of May. It's June 3rd through 7th. We're going to be staying at this stunning estate way, way, way down east, way past Acadia, in Maine, right on the coast. And it will be Monday mornings through Friday afternoon. And we will have morning movement practices that are connected to what we've been talking about on the podcast. Outdoor, natural, gentle, but physical excursions that relate and connect in some way to the morning practices. And then open time, late afternoon through evening, usually from 3 o'clock on, for whatever process you bring, whether it's journaling, a video project. People brought a lot of writing. A lot of people ended up bringing stuff, but what it's like to be out there, the veil between sensation and the sort of spiritual world and your creative world, it just becomes very thin. And so people brought some work, but often found that they wanted to engage with what they were working on in a really different way. And that was, sparked their creative processes in ways that were totally profound, like gave bolstered new support for what they had started. So say they were writing a piece, a memoir of like reflections on their family. It like ignited a whole new way of framing a few of the essays. Or say they already had a lot of writing and that felt formed, but there was like this idea of like the creative unknown. Like, how do I make something, enter a creative project without knowing what it has to become? And that became a whole new way of jewelry making, like totally unexpected. Really kind of from the lesser conscious in them. And so, you'll be told to bring a project and then engage with it, but see what it wants to become there that maybe it wouldn't be in your normal life. And my assistant Mallory and I, you know, we get everybody's food needs and then we do a meal plan, and Mallory cooks